Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. This is Lewis Fine, and this is our inaugural broadcast for Walden Bromley Media. And we're going to be talking about the art of storytelling, branding as storytelling. And when I was reviewing the different stories that I have heard and read about over the course of many years, there is one story, actually, there are two stories that resonate powerfully because they have all the elements of a great story. Larger-than-life personalities, exotic or semi-exotic locales, which is not to suggest that they're luxurious locales, but they are, in fact, exotic, remote, distant. And they involve everyday people and extraordinary events. Let me tell you about one such person who happens to be the paternal grandfather of a friend of mine. And my friend's grandfather sold insurance. He sold it to companies and individuals throughout the then 48 states, the 48 contiguous states. So this predates the incorporation or the inclusion of Alaska and Hawaii into the Union. And he was in the Texas Hill Country. He was going to visit the owner of a smokehouse. They produced, they sold, and they shipped to consumers throughout the United States brisket and bacon. My friend's grandfather was a semi-observant Jew, so trying the bacon was out of the question, though he did indulge and ate some of the brisket, which he said was delicious. But the man he met went by the name of P.A. Wildersum. And this is out in the Texas Hill Country, where it looks beautiful, it looks fertile. It looks like a place where you can have a farm and you would expect to see maybe one or two grain silos. But in fact, the soil is not rich. It is not conducive to farming. And many people throughout the course of the Great Depression learned that lesson the hard way. There was no, at the time, electricity. There was no, at the time, water that could be easily extracted by turning the knob on a sink or a faucet in the bathroom. You had to get it from the well, and you'd see people who were bow-legged because carrying those buckets of water, and they would have a wooden piece of equipment that went over their shoulders, and there would be a bucket on each side, and having carried these pails of water 5-6 times a day, every day, 7 days a week, affected their posture, affected their gait, and you could see them. You could see who the water gatherers were. Well, my friend's grandfather drives out in an Oldsmobile, new Oldsmobile, which was provided by the company he was working for. He drives out to the Texas Hill Country to meet with P.A. And P.A. says, "I want to tell you something, Irving. Now, I want to show you something." And he takes the latch of this big wooden door, about the size of a door you would see in a barn. He takes the latch, he lifts it up, and then he reaches into his back pocket on the right side, and he's got this long skeleton key, and he inserts it in the lock. He turns it about 45 degrees. There's a clicking sound, and then a creaking sound as the door opens, as he pulls the door open. And then the smell just hits you. And PA, he doesn't say a word, but you can hear the inhalation by him. So my friend's grandfather says, where the aroma of the smokehouse, of the bacon and the brisket, just smell unbelievable. And he takes down this big slab of pork belly, which had been rubbed in brown sugar, pepper, and salt, and massaged. And a tactile experience, an artisan's experience. And they hang these pork bellies in the smokehouse for 21 days. And PA reaches to the side of this wooden box. And you can see the nails that have been hammered in on each side. They're askew. Box is scratched, worn. Turns out PA built it with his father 50 years prior to this incident. And he takes out a sort of a hunting knife. He unsheaths it, and he starts cutting. And he says to my friend's grandfather, Irving, take a bite. And Irving says, PA, I'm an observant Jew, semi-observant, but I don't eat pork. I don't eat shrimp. But I will try your brisket. And PA says, fair enough. Should tell you there's a shul. That's what he called it. Not a temple, not a synagogue. He said, there's a shul in Austin. Bethel. If you have time, drive out to Bethel. Wonderful rabbi. Well, he's cutting this pork belly. And he takes a bite. PA takes a bite. He just closes his eyes. And then you hear this snap. A hand slapping the shoulder of PA like that piece of wood to which buckets of water were attached that the women in the hill country would carry. And with that slap, Irving looks up. PA turns around, startled at first, and then a smile comes on his face. And PA says to Irving, Irving, like you to say hello to a man from the hill country. A man who's going to bring the lights. That's what he said. He's going to bring the lights to the hill country. He's in the Congress in Washington, D.C. And the man extended his long arm and he said, Irving, my name's Lyndon Baines Johnson. LBJ was a congressman at the time. Later become a senator. Later, he would become the Senate Majority Leader, the Vice President of the United States, and then, on that tragic day in Dallas, November 22nd, 1963, he would take the oath of office aboard Air Force One as the 36th President of the United States, the successor to John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and the predecessor to Richard Milhouse Nixon. But there's another story from Irving. This is now when we're a country of 50 states. And he says to his kid, because Irving and his family, they ultimately settled in Southern California. in Los Angeles, off of Mulholland Drive. So if you've ever been on that road, or if you've ever seen photos or videos of that road at night, you can look out into the San Fernando Valley, and it's this vast, flat, because the mountains are further in the distance. It's a vast topography of lights, a sort of flat universe of constellations. And Irving comes home, and he says to his wife, "I've got a new client that's going to come over for coffee and crumb cake." So he said, coffee and crumb cake. And Irving never brought clients to the house. He would meet them at their offices. He would meet them in restaurants. He'd meet them on the road, where he'd meet them, as he did with PA, where they did their work from morning till night. But this was a different kind of client, different sort of case. So around 7:45, 8 p.m., there's a knock at the door. Irving says to his wife, "Phyllis, I'll get it. It's the client." And Irving's briefcase is on the kitchen table. There were three plastic chairs bolted into the kitchen floor. Table had a formica surface, sort of a mid-century home. And they had a kidney-shaped swimming pool with a diving board and slide in the backyard. This guy walks in. Shirt is unbuttoned. It's a dress shirt, an expensive-looking dress shirt, but the top four buttons are unbuttoned. And he's not wearing a jacket. He's got a pair of jeans. Irving called them dungarees. And some pretty weather-beaten Converse sneakers. And he sits down and he says, "Hey, Irving, where do I sign about the papers we talked about yesterday when you were in my office on Sunset?" And Irving said, "I've put a red sticker next to each page. There's 7 pages out of this 20-page document. 7 of those pages where you see that red tab, I need your signature." And the guy reaches into his pocket, just like PA did so many years ago, to get that skeleton key. But he takes out a Parker fountain pen, the pen of presidents, the pen used by presidents, the pen used by President Johnson to sign the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. A Parker pen. And he signs and he initials those 7 red tabulated pages of the 20 pages that Irving had put together. They shook hands. The guy never even had time for coffee or crumb cake. And Irving said to his wife, "July 5th. We have tickets." It's July 5th, 1968. "We have tickets. This guy just gave it to us. See this band. I've never heard of them, but they're supposed to be a big deal, so maybe we should bring the kids or give the kids the tickets." Phyllis says, "What's the band's name?" Irving says, "The Doors." July 5th, 1968, the Hollywood Bowl. Jim Morrison preparing to sing The End and asking the light man, "Hey, Mr. Light Man, turn the lights down." The rest is history.